The sin of covetousness is not often perceived to be as wicked as it really is. The gravity of this sin, however, is seen in that it is plainly prohibited in the moral law, that is, the Ten Commandments, which are binding upon all people in all ages. The prohibition of covetousness makes up the 10th commandment in the Decalogue, and it is listed with the prohibition of murder, adultery, and theft, and others. In the New Testament, the sin of covetousness is found in the company of the sins of extortion, idolatry, fornication, and adultery, and drunkenness. It is a sin that the Lord detests. And it's written in Psalm 10, verse 3, that God abhors the covetous person. You might be saying then, well, what kind of a sin is this? Covetousness is a sin that has to do with desire. It's desire that's inordinate, desire that is unreasonable, desire that exceeds the normal limits for something that a person who is given to covetousness, it's not lawful for him or her to obtain. There is nothing wrong with having desires. The Bible acknowledges that people have desires. Delight thyself in the Lord thy God, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. But covetousness is going beyond the bounds. If a desire is not to be realized, then we should leave the matter there. It's only when we persist and insist that we must have this particular thing that it's either wrong for us to have on the face of it, or else it will prove costly to us. That's when it becomes the sin of covetousness. The practice of this particular sin brings with it the direst of consequences. One of these such instances is recorded for us in the reading that we had earlier in 1 Kings chapter 21, where we have recorded for us the peril of covetousness in the life of one of Israel's most wicked kings and his wife, one of the most wicked women, Ahab and Jezebel. So for a while, from this story at any rate, for a while just now, I want to talk to you about the peril of covetousness. And we look at it from the story and notice, first of all, that the peril of covetousness is seen in the desire that was expressed. King Ahab one day, I imagine, looked out of the palace window and saw a bit of ground adjacent to the palace and said, that would make a tremendous garden for me. I could grow herbs there. I could flavor my meals with what I would grow there. And it would be very convenient for me. I must approach this man that owns it. And the man's name, as we have noticed, was Naboth. So he came to the particular man, Naboth, and he made what, on the face of it, was a reasonable offer. He says, I'm willing to give you a better vineyard than this. And probably it could have been, because the king was desirous of having it. He says, if you don't want an exchange, he says, I'll give you money for this. It appeared reasonable on the face of it, until we see that the king was rebuffed. Notice what Naboth said in verse 3. And Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid it me that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. Now, why was he rebuffed? Was it that he was holding out for more money? Did he realize if the king wants this, well then, I stand to gain a lot here? Was he trying to make the king look small by coming back and and offering more money? Or was he just an old miser with a particular part of ground digging in who didn't want to be given the change? None of those reasons. The reason that Naboth gave in verse 4 is that it was verse 3, that God had forbidden him because it was the inheritance of his fathers. Now, what's that all about? I want you to turn back to Numbers chapter 36 and verse 7, and we'll get the answer here. So shall not the inheritance of the children of Israel remove from tribe to tribe. For every one of the children of Israel shall keep himself to the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. In other words, this was a paternal inheritance, and it was not to be sold. We read elsewhere in a verse akin to this in the book of Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 23 that the land was not to be sold forever. It was the Lord's. And whenever a person came into the good of the land, it was to be passed on down to his sons. It was not to be sold outside the family or the tribe. And that's why Naboth refused. It wasn't that he was insulting the king. It was not that he tried to make the king look small. He said, the Lord forbid it me. And Ahab himself ought to have known, being a Jew, what the law of God said. So while the desire was reasonable, it was rebuffed. And it was rebuffed because of Naboth's commitment to the word of God. My dear friend, a covetous spirit is not soon or easily subdued. Notice the fourth verse. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. Can you imagine that? The king that had practically everything that he wanted, like a spoiled, crabbed, huffing little child that was pouting because he couldn't get his own way. He went in, threw himself down in the bed, and wouldn't even take any food. He was so upset. That's how covetousness was affecting this man. This man who had most of everything that he wanted, and he wasn't going to have this particular thing because of religious reasons. Because of a principle. Now he's pouting. But there's worse than that, as the peril of covetousness will show. But notice in the second place about the peril of covetousness, not only is it seen in the desire that was expressed, but in the design that was conceived. Enter Jezebel. She comes into the room. And sees him lying there and says, what's wrong with you? Why are you not eating? And he tells the sad tale. But it's very interesting that he omitted a part. Notice verse 6. He said to her, because I spake unto Naboth the Jezreelite, and said unto him, give me the vineyard for money, or else if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. He never said why. He made Naboth look bad in the eyes of this scheming queen. Did you notice when we finished our reading, verse 25, there was none like unto Ahab, which did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of the Lord, whom Jezebel his wife stirred up. Here's a king who is not the dominant person in that marriage, but rather it's the woman. She's the schemer. She's the prime mover. And notice an instance of it here in verse 7. And Jezebel his wife said unto him, dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? It's as much as we would say, who is the king of Israel? Is it you or is it Naboth? You're the king. You shouldn't be getting yourself into a tizzy like this. You have the divine right to do what you want. Notice what she said to him. Arise and eat bread. Let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. Now you can see, first of all, the essence of this design is, I will secure the vineyard for you. She's so confident. This is a design. We're going to see how it led up to it. But this was the plan. This was the purpose. You have that vineyard. Now, in the book of the Revelation, there was false teaching going on in one of the churches at Thyatira. And the instigator of it, the prime mover of it there, was a woman called Jezebel. Only time you read of Jezebels in the Bible, they were evil women. So Jezebel now begins to effect this design. She begins to put it into motion. And so, first of all, she takes the quill and the papyrus, or we would say the pen and the paper. And she begins to write, notice verse 8, she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in the city, dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in the letter, saying, proclaim a fast, set Naboth on high among the people, and set two men, sons of Belial, before him to bear witness against him, saying, thou dost blaspheme God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him that he may die. This is a nefarious woman. First of all, she's given to hypocrisy. She's doing it in the king's name. The king has not been doing it. She writes it in the king's name and puts the king's seal on the paper. And then she's given to perjury because she's getting false witnesses lined up to down and to condemn an innocent man. She's given to hypocrisy. She's giving herself to perjury. She's giving herself to forgery. And then she's giving herself to murder. She's commanding the death of this righteous man, Naboth. She sends word to the nobles and the rulers of Jezreel what her plan is, or what Ahab's plan ostensibly is. And then they get this day of fast called for, to give the impression there's some terrible sin in the country, and for a religious veneer, we need to get right before God and know who it is and get it done with. Whereas the real reason was, it was the only way to get the vineyard of this man. So Naboth, being a religious man, will go and observe this fast. And then these two scoundrels come in, the sons of Belial. And they begin to stand up and criticize Naboth as one who had blasphemed God and the king. And according to Leviticus 24, this is a serious sin to blaspheme. The death penalty was the result of it. And poor Naboth hardly knew what was happening, that he was taken and he was singled out. And the man was murdered. But more than that, we didn't read it in 1 Kings 21. We are told in another place. His sons were taken with him, and they were murdered. So the way was open for the vineyard to become the possession of Ahab for nothing. My dear friend, this is where covetousness can lead to when it is unchecked. This wicked queen concocted a design, and she put it into play, and a man lost his life and his sons lost their life, and there's a widow in Jezreel that day grieving and mourning because of the loss of her husband and boys, for the simple reason they wanted to honor God. The perils of covetousness. If we're given to it, we are on a downward spiral. But notice in the third place, not only the desire that was expressed and the design that was conceived. Notice the deed that was wrought. It was carried out. Verse 11, right down there to verse 14. The elders and nobles of the city were complicit in all of this. The two scoundrels were rounded up. They singled out this man, Naboth, told lies on him. The information, they took him out and had him stoned to death. The information was given to Jezebel. She went into her husband. She says, arise, get up, go out into the vineyard. It's yours now. Can you imagine how Ahab felt? Was it in his mind? How did she manage this? And then, of course, the knowledge of his wife would lead him to the place where he wouldn't have to wonder anymore. He knew the schemer that she was. She was an idolater. She came from a heathen country and brought her false religion into the country. She was the one that slew, had the prophets of God slain. So he wasn't really too surprised at what was happening here. But there are two things about this deed that are noteworthy. First of all, it was sinful. It was the putting of an innocent man and his sons to death. Now, it all started with covetousness. And it led on to another one of the commandments being broken. The sixth one, thou shalt not kill. And then the eighth one, thou shalt not steal. The ninth one, thou shalt not bear false witness. Do you see how all of those commandments and God's moral law were broken because of the sin of covetousness? If Naboth, or if Ahab, had let it go whenever Naboth said, you can't have the vineyard because God doesn't allow it, then he wouldn't have been given to covetousness. It wouldn't have been an issue. But not only was this a sinful deed, it was shameful. Shameful in that an innocent man and his children were put to death by one who was responsible for the protection of loyal subjects in his country. But because of the covetousness of the king and the help of his wife, had led to a slaughter of this family, and it led to the eventual judgment of God. You say, why are you bringing all of this to us for? Because any one of us can sin. There is not a one of us here, no matter who we are, but we can sin in any of these ways of breaking the Ten Commandments. And certainly in this subtle one of covetousness, that can be a secret sin. But the Bible tells us in Colossians that covetousness is idolatry. And it's not so outward. We might look down our nose at a drunkard, or an adulterer, or a Sabbath breaker. But covetous, we can be very smug about that. But God detests it as much as these other sins in the moral law. And any one of us, I say, any one of us, we can be given to this in a subtle way. It can get such a grip on us, and it can lead us into terrible spiritual decline and lead us away from God because of our inordinate desire for things that it is not lawful for us to have. The design that was expressed shows it to us, or the desire that was expressed. The design that was conceived shows us the perils of covetousness. The deed that was wrought shows it to us. I want you to notice, lastly, the disclosure that was made, how this shows it to us. From verse 17 onward, there was an onlooker here. And the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, arise, go down to meet Ahab, king of Israel, which is in Samaria. Behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth, whether he has gone down to possess it. It didn't take Ahab too long to go out once he heard that Naboth was dead. And it didn't take him too long to go in. He soon got up off his bed where he was moping and got down to that vineyard to try to take possession. But there was an onlooker that he was not aware of, and God saw it. And ladies and gentlemen, God can see into our lives. He knows our thoughts. He searches the heart and tries the reins of the heart. God knows all of these things. The Bible says all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Thou, God, seest me, is a truth that keeps ringing down through the ages. Hagar said that and knew it to be so. Now notice very quickly a number of things about this disclosure. First of all, notice the source of it. The primary source, of course, was God. God saw it. And now, this disclosure that's being made to Ahab in the vineyard is being disclosed to him by Elijah as the secondary source. And not only do we see the source of this disclosure, but the shock of it to Ahab. Notice verse 19. And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, thus saith the Lord, hast thou killed and also taken possession? And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, thus saith the Lord, in the place where the dogs licked the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood, even thine. Verse 23, and of Jezebel also spake the Lord, saying, the dog shall eat Jezebel by the wall of Jezreel. Would you like to have heard a message of condemnation like that? What a shock to that man. His bubble burst as he's standing there surveying the vineyard that he had acquired by such a malicious, devious, sinful, cruel way. Come to think of it, it was hard for Elijah as well to be faithful. God gave him a commission, and he had to deliver it, whether it was popular or not. Deliver it to none other than the king and to none other who was responsible for the slaughter of this man and his son. That's what's needed today, friend. People who have been called to the office of preaching to be faithful, not to be deliberately offensive and rude and arrogant, but when they come to a certain place in the Bible, they don't skirt it because it may not please some of the congregations. Elijah was a man that was true to God and his conscience. That must not have been easy. In fact, whenever he appeared on the scene, Ahab's conscience began to prick him already, verse 20. And Ahab said to Elijah, hast thou found me, O mine enemy? It was a shocking disclosure at any rate for this wicked king. But notice something else about this disclosure. It was swift. Notice again verse 17. And the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, arise, go down to meet Ahab, king of Israel, which is in Samaria. Behold, he's in the vineyard of Naboth, whither he has gone down to possess it. No sooner is Naboth dead and his children than Ahab has gone in to take up the possession when God commissions a servant and Elijah has to go down post haste to that place. And before Ahab can get working out a preliminary plan in his mind how he wants to landscape the place or to cultivate it, he's hearing the message of condemnation. And then notice, lastly, about the disclosure, its sequel. How did it all finish? We'll turn over to chapter 22. Notice verse 34. A certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. That's Ahab. That's the king here. Wherefore he said unto the driver of his chariot, turn thine hand and carry me out of the host, for I am wounded. And the battle increased that day, and the king was stayed up in his chariot against the Syrians and died at even, and the blood ran out of the wound into the midst of the chariot. And there went a proclamation throughout the host about the going down of the sun, saying, every man to a city, and every man to his own country. So the king died and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria, and one washed the chariot in the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood, and they washed his armor according to the word of the Lord which he spake. Just as God said it, through Elijah, and Elijah told him, standing in the vineyard, it came to pass. Oh, the peril of covetousness that has resulted in death for this man. We didn't read all of chapter 21, but you'll find his dynasty was to be cut off. And that happened. And his son was slain. I want you to turn over to 2 Kings chapter 9. Notice verse 7. And thou shalt smite the house of Ahab thy master, that I may avenge the blood of my servants the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of the Lord, at the hand of Jezebel. Now, Jezebel's going to come into it now. Verse 10, and the dog shall eat Jezebel in the portion of Jezreel, and there shall be none to bury her. And he opened the door and fled. The background for that is, King Jehu was anointed. A wee fella, one of the children of the sons of the prophets, went in, anointed the king, and delivered the commission. And he got out as quickly as he could, but Jehu knew that he was to become king. Now, one of the things that he did, turn down to verse 26. Surely I have seen yesterday the blood of Naboth and the blood of his son, saith the Lord. And I will requite thee in this plot, saith the Lord. Now therefore take and cast him into the plot of ground, according to the word of the Lord. Now verse 30. And when Jehu was come to Jezreel, by this time Jezebel was retired more or less from public life. But notice in verse 30, when Jehu was come to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her face and tired her head and looked out of the window. And as Jehu entered in at the gates, he said, had Zimri peace? Who slew his master? And he lifted up his face to the window and said, who is on my side? And there looked out to him two or three eunuchs, and he said, throw her down. So they threw her down, and some of her blood was sprinkled on the wall and on the horses, and he trod her underfoot. And when he was come in, he did eat and drink, and said, go see now this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's son. And they went to bury her, but they found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands. Wherefore they came again and told him, and he said, this is the word of the Lord which he spake by his servant Elisha the Tishbite, saying, in the portion of Jezreel shall dogs eat the flesh of Jezebel. Exactly as God said it would happen, it did happen. So Ahab has died according to the judgment. Later, Jezebel died according to the judgment. Dogs licked up the blood. And as a result of the covetousness of that one man, he and his wife died, an innocent man and his children died, a dynasty was cut off, and the sons of Ahab also were cut off, all because of the covetousness that that man was given to when he eyed the vineyard of Naboth that it was not lawful for him to have. I finish with this. Quite a number of years ago, there was an awful disease that broke out, and it had widespread effects in places where it had broken out. There was a lady that came from London to visit in a certain place, a lodging house, and she stayed over. And she contracted this dreaded disease. And inside 3 days, she was dead. Now, the doctor who was attending her, this seemed to have been the very first case of this disease. The doctor who was attending her advised the family to burn all the clothes that she had been wearing in case of the infection, it could have been caught by somebody else. But there was a wee girl in that house. Her aunt ran the guest house, or the lodging house. And the wee girl was always moaning when she saw any other girl that had nicer clothes than what she had. And she became very sullen. That would remind one of Ahab here whenever he went to his bed and wouldn't talk and was displeased and wouldn't eat food. Now, she heard the doctor give the order, and they gathered up this woman's clothes, this wealthy woman who had come down, and the wee girl managed to retrieve a beautiful silken gown that the rich, wealthy woman had been wearing when she died. She says, well, I'm not stealing it because it's all to be condemned to the incinerator anyhow. So she managed to get it away, and a few days after that, she went back to her home place to visit her mother, and she was wearing this gown, this silk gown that the rich lady had. While she was at her mother's place, she contracted the illness, and in 10 days, that young teenage girl, she became a corpse as well. Covetousness led to the loss of her life. Ladies and gentlemen, it's one of the commands of the moral law. As I've already said, we could commit it secretly. But let what we have read this morning about Ahab and Jezebel and the awful effects on Naboth and his children, how innocent people suffered as a result of their sin, let us search our hearts that this not be a part of our lives. If there are desires we have and it's being made plain to us, the fulfilling of them is not for us, let's not persist. There's a terrible peril associated with it, and an awful price to be paid. Let's bow together in prayer.